I didn't try to import the database, and I just created a new one. I figured that was the cleanest way to test it.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it. I did run it earlier today with an import and didn't have any problem on my machine, but it's had some problems. But anyway, have you tried any of the new features?
Well, I like the automatic image routine. That was nice. The ATU calibration worked quite well. Not ATU, PA. And didn't do much transmitting. Tried the ATU a couple times, and it seemed fine. I'd been plagued by a strange operation of it before, so this would be nice.
Yeah, we confirmed conclusively that the problem was a very short pulse from the control software at the end of a tuning cycle. Actually, when it went from transmit to receive, it would put out a very short pulse on the control line to the ATU, which would throw it into bypass randomly, but most of the time. So I'm sure that's what it was. And we could definitively demonstrate before and after that that was the problem.
Excellent, because that ATU is mighty slick the way it fits in there.
Yeah, well, after fixing it, I tuned an 8-to-1 SWR on an 80 meters. I've got a dipole that is trap tuned on the low end of 80 meters, and so I tuned it up on the high end, and it was 8-to-1, and it tuned perfectly up there after after the software mod, and I couldn't get it to tune at all before.
I have a question on that. When you put it in bypass mode, are any of the relays engaged, or is it just straight through as if it the tuner was not in there?
What it does is it has relays that short across all the inductors and open all the capacitors that are to ground. So by shorting all the inductors, it effectively bypasses it.
Okay. Are those latching relays, or do they stay energized while it's in tune mode?
They're latching relays, and the thing is completely powered down when it's not tuning.
Okay, so if I go from automatic to bypass, I don't recall hearing any click that the relays unlatch.
You might not. Let's see. If it's already bypassed, you won't hear any clicks. Sometimes what I do, you can look at it and see what it's doing by watching the LEDs. If you take the top off, and you can click the bypass, and if it gives you three short flashes, that means it's gone into bypass.
Ah, yeah, I've watched that display where it tells you the SWR by the flashes, which is kind of a neat feature. I'll try to watch the relays, or I might even put a meter across them.
Yeah, well, a long green at the end of the tune means you have less than 1.5-to-1. And what was happening with the software glitch was you'd get a sort of a truncated long green followed by three flashes, which means it had gotten a tune and then suddenly was switching into bypass mode at the end. So that was what was happening, is because of the glitch, it was actually putting it back into bypass mode after it finished tuning.
I'm certainly glad you identified that. That'll be a lot more useful. I'm dying to try some of the other features out. It looks intriguing.
Yeah, the new software for the virtual audio cable, so that you can connect all kinds of other applications to it without a second sound card, is just awesome. Eric and Bob have really worked hard on that and have really nice thing going there. And it's got a lot of potential for expansion and putting all kinds of applications talking to the Tower SDR without any intervening hardware.
Jill, that new sound card looks like it's kind of slick. Have you got any system numbers on it yet?
Well, what I can tell you that it has about, we did a quick measurement on it. I haven't done exhaustive tests, but it had at least 7 dB more headroom than the Delta 44 did.
Wow. Okay. Now, is that on stronger signals or better, or weak, on the strong signal side or the weak signal side?
Strong signal side.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. That's getting to be kind of neat. Go think about that a little bit. I haven't heard that brand name before. That's a new one on me.
Yeah, well, I did a lot of research on trying to find something that had enough inputs and outputs, and it's hard to find something with 4 analog inputs and 4 analog outputs, and I ran across that one and got one in here and found that it was fairly easy to interface. It did have to write some code, but it wasn't too bad. And I had it up and running within a couple of hours, and it performs very well. There's some other neat features is it has two balanced microphone inputs on the front panel that you can, the connectors are really neat because you can plug either XLR connectors into it or TRS, you know, the 1/4 inch into the same plug, and they are true balanced. And so it has the mic preamps built in with front panel controls. And it has a headphone on the front panel with a volume control. In their software, their mixer panel is really nice. You can connect the headphones to any of the inputs or outputs to monitor any of those by just selecting it on the mixer panel, which is very nice. But anyway, the additional headroom matches pretty much what the specs say, or pretty close. It's rated at 107 dB dynamic range, and the Delta 44 is rated at 99, as I recall. And that's about the difference we saw in a real quick head-to-head comparison, but I will say it was very quick. I haven't done any exhaustive tests. It did not seem to change the MDS at all. It's mainly on the top end.
Excellent. Very good. Well, hopefully his bot's got about a gazillion 8640s. Maybe he'll have a chance to test it. That could put you over the edge there on your HF contesting.
Oh, yeah. In fact, you know, in a head-to-head, it could be used on desktops, even though we're kind of positioning it for laptops right now. I could, you know, if you have a FireWire card, which is pretty inexpensive, it work well for desktops as well. It's a real neat little box. It fits in the palm of your hand, too. It's a real nice size.
Excellent. So, took it, what, just a couple of dB, not quite as good as the Lynx cards?
Let's see, the Lynx cards are rated at 120, or 117 to 120, somewhere in that range. The 190, the audio file 192 is probably in between the Firebox and the Lynx.
Okay, very good. Oh, that's a good thing to know. Looks like the pricing would have it about in between there as well.
I have learned that you can synchronize multiple Delta cards, of which the 192 is a Delta card. I haven't tried it here yet, but They do have instructions on how to sync two of them, or more than that.
Very good. Well, I've got internet going up at my mountaintop site. I'm hoping to hear that you guys actually can get to the point where you can split the client and server off one of these days, and we'll go see what we can't do remoting these things.
Yeah, well, there's Eric and others have started working on the architectural definition for splitting up the software so that it can be made more server friendly. I think Bob joined there too, if I see correctly. He could probably talk about that some, and certainly Bob can talk about the new release. I think that'd be good for him to do, and kind of what he and Eric, Bob was here last week, I think it was last week, and they made a lot of progress on this latest release. Bob, you want to talk about the release here?
Sure, let me, hang on one sec.
How you feeling, by the way?
Terrible. Can you tell? You sure you can listen to me and see I'm still stuffed up. This is the worst cold I've had since I was a child.
Oh, man. Well, I haven't gotten anything, but Virginia's been coming down with something, so maybe you did leave some germs around here.
Oh, that would not be good. I'd much rather you get it than her.
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Bob.
Okay, let's see. Wow. What can I say? All right, so the stuff that got left off of the announcement on the Flex Forum, let me do that first. We got a working implementation of the equalizer, the graphic equalizer, both the one-third and the two-thirds octave equalizer. The one-third octave equalizer is about twice as expensive computationally as the two-thirds octave equalizer. So that's a 15 band and a 31 band, and the centers of the filters in the band are the ISO standards. So for the audio files, you'll recognize this. The implementation of the equalizer, which works on both transmit and receive, it's a bank of one-third or two-thirds octave-spaced four-pole Butterworth filters, where you've done the right thing about doing the crossover. So these filter banks work terrifically well, and everything adds up perfectly. It does just exactly what it's supposed to do, out to about, oh, let's call it 10 or 11 kilohertz. For the one-third, and about 7 or 8 kilohertz for the two-thirds. And then the then you start seeing some little scalloping in the somebody needs to turn their box off. Whoever's box on, turn it off, please. Okay, so just a little bit of scalloping from, let's say, let's call it 9 kilohertz. That's about the mean. Out to 20 kilohertz, there's a little bit of scalloping. That means there's a little bit of a ripple in the response. But most people are not going to use these equalizer filters out past 4 or 5 kilohertz anyway, and I assure you, below 4 kilohertz, they work beautifully. Now, there's a new limitation on the sliders. This is not an arbitrary decision. It's a decision based on the way the thing works. For those of you who are audiophiles or have done some reading about graphic equalizers, there's Rain, a company called Rain, R-A-N-E, invented a thing, or claim they invented or actually invented a thing called a constant Q graphic equalizer, and then the perfect Q graphic equalizer. You can see this in operation. Why they did this, if you use the sliders on the graphic equalizer in the old limits, which were minus 20 dB to plus 20 dB. blow about 10 to 12 dB of rejection. Where so if you got one of those sliders down to about negative 10 or between negative 10 and negative 12 dB, and then went lower than that, the notch actually started filling back in with noise. This is caused by a lowering of the Q, not of that filter, but of the system. So we put practical limits, limits where the thing would actually work right, as the limits for the sliders. This is not an arbitrary decision. It was based on both theory, backed up by experimentation. So the range on the graphic equalizers is minus 12 to plus 15. Okay, so the leveler, as you know, we implemented a new AGC system based on the document that Phil Harmon wrote, and the leveler did not work. It had a really dumb bug in it where I was setting the some of the critical leveler things with the ALC setting. So it was just, it was not working. So that's been fixed, and an odd boundary condition that you often can get in control systems of the type where you're doing this kind of control loop wouldn't allow the thing to operate at all, and I made just a minor change in the way the boundaries were interpreted, and the thing worked immediately. So now the leveler works. Its default setting is 10 dB of gain. So it will never go less than 0 dB or a gain of 1, but it will go up to a gain of 10. Now, we've given you the ability to increase that, but let me say, I think your listeners will find it very objectionable if you turn on 40 dB of leveling compression and raise the fan noise in your room up to an unusable level. So start it at 10 and see how it works. This is meant to kind of level out the response of the microphone should you tilt your head away from the microphone momentarily or shift the angle of your mouth with respect to the microphone. It's meant to level out the response. Okay, so the compander was accidentally initialized as an expander in the DSP initialization. So if you were trying to use the compander in its initial conditions, where Eric would not actually send the command to the DSP because he had assumed that we had done the right thing, it was actually working as an expander, and it made the audio sound very distorted. That was fixed. It was turned into an actual compressor again, and so from now the default setting for the compander sounds very good, and I tell you, I'm really impressed with it. Frank did a wonderful job of the compander, and it really works well. So the transmit ALC was all wrong. The ALC set minimum setting was actually being set by the leveler minimum setting. So for those of you who've been looking at your peak power meter and seeing ridiculously impossible powers, this was one of the contributing factors. That's been fixed. The integrated ATU was... The LDG ATU was being controlled incorrectly. Now the thing works like a champ. It really is solid. This was a little bit of a control program bug that Eric found and fixed. So the filter disappears from the pan adapter when you're using very narrow filters. So, for example, if you drop down to 20 or 15 hertz or something like that, and the filter line would disappear when you put it in the pan adapter mode. Your little green box would go away. So Eric put a limit on that of 1 pixel width. It can't go to 0 pixels. It will limit itself to 1 pixel. Some TX profiling setups, saving bugs were fixed. And the calibration for the audio was broken in the Delta 44. That was fixed. Cars that were not Delta 44s did not recover properly. When you are not using the Delta 44, if you're using a non-supported or a single channel card, those things are handled by different callbacks in the audio system. One is a 4-port callback, one is a 2-port callback, but they're handled by different pieces of code, and there's been some struggle to keep both of the pieces of code working identically. So one of these differences crept in, and the TX RF setting was not being done right when you left MOX. If you had a non-Delta 44 card, that's been fixed. So a box and foot switch problem is fixed. Okay, so if you enabled CAT on a non-existing COM port, that would cause the console to crash. That was fixed. The image rejection algorithm was improved. The importing a database caused some errors. I'm sure you've seen these dialog boxes pop up about the database errors, confusing me and you and everyone else. About 80 and 160 meters, those were fixed. The display peak would not work when the average was on. That's been fixed. The transverter local oscillator error, you couldn't put it in a negative number, or if you did, it would just treat it as positive. And now that's fixed. You can now have a negative or a positive offset in the local oscillator for the transverter. And now the transverter power was not updated when you changed the power on the front panel. Now you have transverter control with the power control on the front panel of the radio. A big change, one that I suggested after I'd gotten bitten by it just one too many times, is I know you've made changes in the setup panel, and you would hit apply or okay, and the audio would stutter, the radio would stop, the pan adapter wouldn't, or the spectrum analyzer wouldn't update the screen, while this hoggish Microsoft database wrote all of its stuff back to itself. I suggested to Eric that he ship all that stuff off to a separate thread, and its only job was to start itself up, write the data to the database, and then shut itself down. But that this thread be on a lower priority than the other stuff. And that, boy, that cleaned that problem up immediately. I mean, Eric was done. He says, I don't know why I didn't do this before. Took him 15 minutes, and the problem is completely gone. There was an issue in restoring pan adapter after you went into spec mode. There's still a couple of issues there. We're attempting to work that out. One of the things I noticed is we do need to do some reorg in the GUI code. Sometimes multiple commands get sent to the DSP on one button push. So I did a little fix. Eric did a little fix, and now that is prevented. So things that were falling off the end of the shelf no longer fall off the end of the shelf, and the thing actually gets reset. Richard suggested we do clock updates more often, and it's now updated 10 times a second. Okay, so we added CW keying by external programs and keyers, so there's now a secondary keying port. This is meant for those of you who are using a keyer, especially if it's got one that will do DTT, PTT, you want to use this secondary port, even if it's a real COM port, so that you can do the PTT on one pin and the CW on the other pin, and which pin is which is selectable by you, the operator. You can also use this to great effect with MixW and MMTTY and MMSSTV and all that stuff. So we added a selection and hacked the code so that it would do kind of a neat thing. If you'll notice in MixW and MMTTY and MMSSTV, if you want to do CAT things simultaneously with PTT and or CW, all those things have to be done on the same port. You can't open one port for CAT and a different port for PTT using the MMSSTV, MMTTY, and MixW, unless you are actually doing two different physical ports. So that seemed inconvenient, so this made great use of the virtual COM ports. So now you set up a CAT port with a virtual COM port, and you talk to it with one of those three programs, and you'll notice MixW is actually reading the mode and the frequency and all that stuff. thinking that the Power SDR is a Kenwood, and thinking that it's a Kenwood, it does all that setting. But if you'll notice on the DSP keyer panel, you can now select CAP for the secondary port. That uses the DTR and RTS signals from the exact same port you're listing for CAT commands to PTT and or key for CW, the Power SDR. This is really neat, and it just worked perfectly. The only thing I had to do was to make a private serial port public in the serial code that Phil gave us so that we could do the CAT stuff. And I brought the right signals over, read the right conditions, and it worked immediately. A major new feature that we have been working on for a while finally came to full fruition. And I got to tell you, I've never been more shocked about how quickly something worked. It worked immediately. The first time we turned it on and tried it, it worked. Well, that's because we've done all of this work ahead of time doing ring buffering for the DSP and for WAV files. So here's what we are able to do now. We have virtual audio card support. So now you can take NixW, NMTTY, or MMSSTV, or PSK31 Deluxe, or those things, and use them with the Power SDR without a single cable between those programs and the Power SDR or the SDR radio. It's all done with device driver magic and software. So there's a document which you can find on the Flex Radio download page. Just go to flexradio.com, click on downloads, and you'll see under the documentation stuff there, Power SDR underscore Victor Alpha Charlie, Power underscore VAC PDF file. There'll be a link. And it's kind of detailed instructions on how to set up the virtual audio cables, how to set up the sound card programs. It's going to look a little daunting the first time you look at it. And I got confused a few times doing it myself. But I got to tell you, after I set it up the first time, I've never touched it since. It was a one-time setup thing. The only time I have to change it now is when I want to do Digital Radio Mondial, and that's because it insists on using 48,000 in stereo, while these other programs will run just fine with 8,000 and mono, which saves some overhead in the operating system. But now the full virtual audio support is there, well, along with the virtual serial. So these programs now just work without a hitch. It really works nicely. And that worked the first time we tried it. We did some tweaking to make sure we don't have buffer overruns and underruns. We made the ring buffers on the virtual audio cable a little larger, et cetera, and checked for overruns and underruns and fixed them if we had them and so forth, and it just works. Now, I've talked about graphic equalizer, I've talked about virtual audio cables, I've talked about virtual COM ports. Just let me give you a caveat that none of those things are for free. Each of those things requires extra computational burden on your computer. And every time we add one of these things, the computational burden gets worse. So if you were one of those that your situation was right on the edge, look, I'm sorry. Your computer was not likely to be able to support these new features because they do take ticks. That said, I have a 3.2 gigahertz P4 hyperthread. That's a good computer. It has a good video card and good sound card and all that stuff. And it all that stuff added, the virtual COM ports, the virtual audio ports, all that stuff added 1% average to the CPU usage. So now I'm at 7, depending on what else is going on the machine, between 7 and 10%. Eric saw on his 2 gigahertz Celeron, it increased the usage by 10%. So he went from like 30 to like 40% on the release mode, which is what you get when you download the code. But if you were on the hairy edge with popping audio and all of that other stuff, this is only going to make it worse, and I'm sorry. Your computer will not support these extra fancy ways of hooking things up. Though it has not been tested yet, Let me say again, it has not been tested, but the code is there to do virtual audio support, virtual audio card support with your non-supported and your single channel cards. The code is there. I have not had a chance to test it yet. I've got my Lynx L22 sitting right here ready to be stuck into the computer. I just haven't done it yet. So the world's most popular software-defined radio is not the Power SDR and the SDR-1000. The world's most popular software-defined radio is the SoftRock 40. And we have fully integrated support for the SoftRock 40 now inside Power SDR. So some of the wave options were added to allow some pre and post processing, and you can read about those. I haven't actually used them, so I'm not going to go into any great detail on what those are, other than just to say that was done. So let me go over this list again and make sure, if you're not already sound asleep, that I didn't miss anything.
Impulse generator?
The impulse generator is not in there yet. It's there, but we have not done it. Eric tried to talk me into taking it out today. But let me tell you, Mike, a fantastic thing happened. It's really fantastic. Tony and Bill, Tony built the SoftRock 40, and Bill ported the software over to support it. And a very good friend of mine, Alex, VE3NEA, who is a brilliant programmer, just brilliant. He wrote DX Atlas and IonoProbe. He wrote a little SDR program called Rocky. And I urge you to go to the VE3NEA website, and if you have a SoftRock 40, download Rocky. In this program, he made fools of us. And let me tell you the fools of us that he made. Let's take 48 kilohertz of IQ coming in. And let's suppose you have some strong signals in that band. You don't care if you don't have strong signals because you're not trying to listen to strong signals, and weak signals barely have any images anyway. But let's take some strong signals. Strong meaning 30 or 40 dB out of the noise. You look for their image pair.
New player.
You make sure that they're the image pair by making sure they're coherent with the strong signal. And on the basis of the image pair, you can do dynamic nulling of the image based on three or four signals. You can do it with one, but it gets better with three or four. And you can change the image rejection across the band. Alex has done this. We will be implementing it. And we have been numbskulls for not doing it today. That's my list.
Hey, Bob, does that replace the impulse generator, or is it complementary to
you? I think it's complementary because we want to know what two reasons. Number one, Alex's thing is a statistical approach. It works. Well, I suppose we find out that with really strong signals in a contest station, it doesn't work well enough. I guarantee you the impulse generator will still work. It will, the direct measurement approach will always outperform the statistically based approach. That's number one. Number two, in order to do the LAIF impulse noise canceller, that can't be done by statistically measuring the image. You'll get a guesstimate of the impulse response of the channel by doing this, but it will be imperfect because you're undersampling the image. You're undersampling the impulse response when you only do image rejection. So the impulse generator is paramount for us. It's required for us to do the automated training of the impulse removal tool.
That makes sense. Yeah, and the impulse that you were talking about beating statistics, because with it you can be every single bin in the FFT can have its own correction factor, right?
That's exactly right. It won't be statistically based, and that's what I meant by undersampling the impulse response. because you're going to see, let's suppose there are three signals, strong signals up. You'll have three signals and there are three images. You will have sampled three bins. That's truly undersampling. Six bins,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So the impulse thing is kind of next on my list of stuff to do. And it'll get done. Hopefully we won't have to go 2 months before another release. Well, I already know some things we need to work on for this. I found some bugs today, 15 minutes after Eric put it up on the website. Let me give you the simple example I found. If you're running a program like WSJT or the Digital Radio Mondial official for sale receiver, they have to be run in stereo. So on the VAC setup, I should have pointed this out. Where the setup, you click on setup and you click on audio, what used to be second audio card now is labeled VAC. That's virtual audio cable. And on there, you'll see how to set it up. But one of the things may not be clear what it is. It's mono stereo. And mono means you're setting up the channel for one channel. Stereo means you're setting it up for two channels. So the mono stereo box, the little box that surrounds the control, and the little checkbox inside that little group box are not set up in the proper way so that their contents, their settings, are automatically flushed to the database. So this means that every time you close the program, you will lose that setting. So that was a bug we found, and it will be fixed and released soon. So there are others. We did some major reorg we long ago figured out what was causing the threading problems in the DSP. We were doing a threading no-no by having the meter thread block the DSP processing thread, and the meter thread was very low priority. We haven't had any serious DSP threading problems since we went to floating point ring buffers and did away with these threading blocks. But there's something odd that can go on now that is clearly in the port audio callback. Let me describe the condition so that you will hear it and know how to fix it. It'll sound like a little buzz saw. So when you something will happen and you'll get a little buzz saw. And in my case, once this happens, you every time you raise and lower a window, every time you touch a button, you get the little buzz saw. And nothing will stop that or make it go away other than closing the program and reopening it. This is a new issue discovered like yesterday. We worked on it, thought it was fixed, and it was not fixed. So this is not a DSP ring buffer or threading issue. I can say that definitively because since we worked on those things well, way, way, way back, we print out an error message when you have a threading or a callback or a ring buffer problem inside the DSP. And none of these error messages are being printed out. So you'll hear this thing going buzzsaw, and the error messages are not being printed out. So there's something going on that's causing a little hiccup in the port audio callback. We need to figure out what that is and release, put out a new release as soon as we do. I thought it was related to the virtual audio cables and too small ring buffers, and we changed the size of the ring buffers and made sure that all that stuff was done more carefully and sizes matched and all that other stuff, and then neither Eric nor I ever got another buzzsaw. We never had it happen again. It never happened once. We released it, and 15 minutes after we released it, Bob, K5KDN, called Eric and told him he had the buzzsaw. So there's still some issue there that we don't yet understand. We will get it. We will fix it. But boy, oh boy, this is a massive new release, as you can tell. And let me warn people, it is a beta release. You cannot release this many new features and have 2, 4, 5 people, some of them only testing one thing, and get everything. We need your feedback, and we will fix the problems. So we fixed the AGC stuff, the leveler stuff, the graphic equalizer, added virtual audio cables, increased the cat control, increased the number of ways you can key the program for CW, on and on and on. That's a lot of stuff, and I am sure that there are bugs that will be found and will need to be fixed. Man, I must have put everybody to sleep. That's all right. You can suffer with me with my nasty cold. Thanks, Ken.
Great work, Don.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Stu. How's it going, buddy?
Haven't heard from you in a long time. When are you going to get a a description how to handle all this new stuff?
Well, there's a big new document up on the webpage of how to handle all that fancy virtual audio cable stuff. And we do need to do some work on the manual because that's several reforms have changed and new capabilities have been added. Yeah, we'll have to work on the manual, Stu, that's for sure.
No problem. I'm patient.
Well, I have a feeling all of you guys are more patient with us than we are with ourselves, so we'll get after it.
Relax, man. Our own wasn't built in a day.
This is true. We've been building Rome for 2 years now.
It's getting to be pretty sick, though. That's for sure.
Isn't it, Mike? I gotta tell you, remember when the first few of us opened up the Visual Basic SDR console and that, and this has come a long way. General's done some great work with the hardware, and hiring Eric is the smartest move he ever made.
Yeah, there you go. Did some good things, that's for sure. Well, I'm you've got me to the point where I think I might have to go get that new IFC board. You know, serial number 3 is kind of in pretty sad shape. So hopefully this will perk it back up again.
Well, see, I tell you, you did so much knifing on that thing. You ought to just buy a new stack. Oh dear. Yeah. So I'm sure you saw the QST review, right? The two resistors given the right impedance and the new front end device made all the difference in the world.
Yep, I'm still just frustrated as heck that I can't find a better LVPTL converter chip to improve that piece of junk that's still there. There's got to be a better device out there, you know. And you're right, that poor board is hacked up more ways than you could possibly imagine.
I'm serious, man. You have really knifed that thing up. And that was the Bulgarian boards.
Well, that's what that was in the first, that was one of the first batch. So, yeah, you know, it wasn't any bad chatter joints on the one I had. It was all okay. Just in the, let's see what we can do to make it better mode. I guess the only other thing is the FixTCal stuff, take in I guess that's probably the FDR 2000 hardware, right, to take in the 10-meg reference and then do some sort of software subtraction to get frequency down to the hertz or whatever. Probably should be a fairly simple thing to do, I think.
You can do it already, buddy. You can plug in 10 megahertz today, and it will pull the device.
Layer left.
Now, the issue is, of course, it's using the multiplier. So you're probably talking about replacing the entire oscillator.
No, actually, I was thinking that, you ought to be able to get down to, within a hertz or so of accuracy. Just plug the 10 megs in from your Z3801 and, with a little CPLD or something like that, you ought to be able to, or maybe something even simpler, I hadn't really thought this through, do a comparison between the 200 megs and the 10 megs. So take 200 megs, divide by 20, compare it with 10 megs, use that, feed that back to, correct the frequency errors.
I already did that. I did that for Hambly and his helped him design the algorithm to pull. Man, these picks with these counters on them, Mike, they're awesome. So I did the Tom Van Back trick of counting the number of ticks, given the 10 megahertz input, and so forth. Now, we'd have to divide the 200 so that it would get down to something that the pick could count. So you would run the pick on the divided 200 megahertz clock and count the number of 10 megahertz pulses and make an adjustment. And in this case, you would just pass off the correction to some kind of communications port. Mike, that'll work. I already know how to do that. That would work tremendously well.
Yeah, and that way, you get both worlds, because that way you don't actually have to try to do a phase lock, because if you try to do a phase lock, that's just going to hose your phase noise up. You get the frequency right, but you'll pay for it.
No, you're the stability. No, you won't. No, you won't. You won't. So the reason is that the stability, the phase stability, is continuing to be supplied by the 200 megahertz oscillator. All you're doing is subtracting off a frequency component. Oh, I see. You mean don't try to do a phase noise, phase lock loop in the software. Yeah. You're right. All you want to do is a frequency correction. You're right. Okay, you're absolutely right. So one other thing is Tony is getting ready to do the SoftRock 40 version 5. There's a SoftRock 40 group on Yahoo Groups for those of you who are interested, and it's still a really, really neat little thing how neat this little receiver is. Gerald, do you have anything else?
Oh, I don't know. My brain's flaking out here. One thing I will say is I was playing around with the audio file 192 down there, and it definitely has good dynamic range on it. One thing we ought to try to do is put two of them together and sync them. I don't know if you saw the information. You can sync two of those internally. You don't even need an external connection, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. So it's done one good thing the Windows kernel did. So, yeah, and not only that, it'll appear to ASIO as one device. So it'll look like a Delta 44.
Exactly. In fact, the nice thing is when you plug in it, you can actually use it and a Delta 44 together, as I understand it. You could use it as the main card and the Delta 44 as your second card.
I am not certain if that is correct, but I'll take your word for it until I get a chance to verify it. The Delta 44, I'm not sure about that, Gerald, but look, we can go find out.
Well, yeah, they do say that you can sync the cards together. I'm not sure how they show up in software, but it says all Delta cards can be synced.
Very nice. That's very good news. Yeah, because the 192 does provide better performance than the Delta 44, but then you need two of them.
Yeah, it's rated, I just looked it up, at 113 dB and the Delta 44 at 99.
Right, and the Lynx is 117.
Yeah, so it's only four off of the Lynx.
Yep, yep. So one of the things I was going to try was virtual audio cable is the single card callback and have the motherboard then play microphone, etc.
And that's a way to do it, too. Absolutely.
Then you'd use their little audio repeater. So all of this stuff is how you use the audio repeater and the virtual audio cables and all that stuff is up on the website on the download page for those of you listening. So I'll try that and see how that works. But I think the FireWire thing, even though it's almost $300, is going to be a great thing for people who really want to use laptops.
It is a very slick box, and one thing that's cool is the fact that you can plug in the headphones and through there, they have a real mixer panel that works great, and you can select any of the inputs or outputs to monitor directly with the headphones, and it has a front panel volume control and balanced microphone inputs with preamps, the whole smear.
So, Gerald, I saw that card a year ago. And their own website calls me to blow it off. And it says two analog inputs and four analog outputs. So I went, well, there's so much for that. Gerald, let me finish. It has 6x10, you're correct. But their website is misleading. What they mean by that is it has two inputs, four outputs that can be controlled by those knobs and work with the preamps. The rest of them are straight line-in, line-out levels. Their website is confusing, and it definitely confused me to the point where I blew the card off and dismissed it.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Sure.
So this is absolutely the right thing for people with laptops. And it's not going to be cheap on a 2.2 gigahertz Pentium M. The thing's going to suck about 40% of the computer supporting the FireWire interface and the DSP. So, you know, it's going to be good. We'll have to see how good. Can we do everything we expect on a desktop, on a laptop with it? Maybe not, but it'll be close.
Well, Eric was surprised at how little the overhead was on the laptop that he was testing it on. So you might want to ask, I can't remember the numbers, but he didn't see it being a big load.
Terrific. That's great.
Ken has been wanting something for his laptop so he could take it roving, and so he went and bought one and brought his laptop over, and so that was how we got it going and figured out it would work, and it ran real well on his laptop.
Hey, that's great. Oh, Gerald. Oh, we're being dumb. What started at 7:00 tonight?
I can't remember.
Victor 31 Lima Lima is Team SDR. They're in Belize, and they are operating an all-SDR multi-two station for the CQ Worldwide single sideband war. So I'm a little too ill to go operate tonight, but I'm going to try to operate some tomorrow. And please look for Victor 31 Lima Lima. It's Larry Lowen, Eric, and Gary, W5ZL. And is there any, Carol? I can't remember, but it's an all SDR 1000 Team SDR in Belize.
Yeah, there is one more, and my brain is not bringing it back to me who that is, but I did work Victor 31 software radio this morning down there. Worked Eric as V31SR this morning from here in Austin. Off the side of my beam.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah, it's going to be exciting. Hopefully, that being in Belize, they have a potential to get a pretty nice score, and it really would be nice if for the world they got in, let's say, the top 10 from Belize. for a multi-two. That would be terrific.
That would be great. Do you know where it's best to, where they're going to be hanging out, or how to follow them?
Yes. So anyone who wants to do that should go to DX Cluster of some type. There are plenty of them on the web. Just Google for DX Space Cluster, and you can go look at the hook your browser up and see callouts. You will see Victor 31 Lima Lima called out.
Good deal. You know why I worked them off the side of my beam, Bob?
Because it won't turn?
Yeah, my tree's grown up into my beam.
Yes, I saw that. I was wondering when you're going to get up there and cut it.
Well, what I did was I went up there today and got Eric to turn the rotor while I pushed it through the trees.
And it didn't break an element?
No, it was loose enough that I could pull it through, so I got it to turn, so I pointed it their direction, so maybe I can talk to them better tomorrow, but I gotta get up there and get one of those tree cutting tools. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen them, but it's a long extension with a cutter on the end of it, so I need to do that and free it up.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes plenty of sense, and go for it. You need to get on the air.
I sure do. Well, I think I'm going to drop out of here and say good night to everybody, and enjoyed it. Thanks for all the great work, Bob. Really appreciate it. Hope you get to feeling lots better. And, man, I'm proud of Frank for quitting smoking.
Yeah, me too. I got to tell you, he just wasn't going to do it till this new way of doing it came along, and apparently it's just a miracle.
Well, I never heard of that before.
Well, it's new. And so this guy he saw assault was absolutely certain was going to die smoking, called him up and said, "Your wife told me to call you." And he says, "Oh, yeah, what for?" He says, "To tell you that I quit smoking." And Frank said after he picked himself up off the floor, he described this new nasal inhaler stuff to use whenever you're really craving a cigarette, and apparently it just does the job. I'm very proud of him. That, and for those of you who don't know what we're talking about AB2KT, Frank Rickle, who is a co-author of the DSP inside of Power SDR, etc., and in addition to this, Frank is doing this. Many of you may or may not know that Frank is a composer and a fairly well-known composer. And on a very famous place in New York City is the Guggenheim Museum. Frank has done a very creative thing. He has written an opera for puppets. And it's going to be performed at the Guggenheim on December the 22nd. So I'll give you guys a report on how it went. I'm very excited and extremely proud of Frank. He is just an incredibly multi-talented guy, and it's really an honor to work with him. So that's a good thing, and good thing happening to him. So two good things happening to Frank.
Wish I could go. That sounds great. Well, good night, everybody. 73s.
Same here. I'm out.
Good night.
Member left. Player left. Player left. Player left. Player left. Player left.
Wow, they sure cleared out.
Player left.
Man, sounds that way. I see you're recording, Mike. Did you catch the whole session? I only got in like the last, 5 minutes or so. I ended up working late tonight.
Yes, I did.
Are you planning on posting that, or if not, you mind putting it somewhere I can get it and take a listen?